Stop by Sherwin-Williams and get 30% off select paints and stains June 13th through the 23rd. It's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Refresh your home inside and out with colors that make every space feel brand new. From cozy interiors to stunning exteriors, we've got the perfect shade for your next project. Shop the sale online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
That's Smiley Kaufman for 61. Wow.
I'm Smiley Kaufman, and this is The Smiley Show.
Welcome back to another episode of The Smiley Show. I'm Charlie Hume. He is Smiley Kaufman. And Smiley, as a father of two that would like some form of like recognition or a medal to be affixed to my lapel here for solo dadding from wake up today all the way until 4 p.m. Eastern, let me be the first to offer you a hearty congratulations, you and Francie, as you are expecting a baby boy this fall.
Yes, indeed.
Congratulations, brother.
Yeah, coming along in October. We're excited. And good on you, by the way, all the way from start to 4 p.m. That's quite the deal.
it was a lot of the biggest chunk of the day was spent chipping and putting, which is like,
dude, the green looks good, by the way.
Thank you.
It looks good. It rolls nice too.
It's a nice roll. It got four different pin placements. There's, you know, different kind of undulations and slopes. So there's not like, it's not like a boring, you know, you get tired of it. And the best part about it is Walker and Kadick love it out there. And so we had Walker just ripping left-handed seven irons all day long. And then Kadick, I just, you got to work on just the feel of a grip early. Just want to get a club into her hands.
You know, Anna Carter isn't quite got the grip figured out. She basically grips it upside down. Doesn't quite even come close to holding a golf club correctly.
Like, yeah, are you saying it's like the wrong hand on top, or like she just, yeah.
It's almost like she grips it like reverse claw underneath. There's no initial great feel. But what she does really good at, or I should say, maybe not even gripping a golf club, terrific dancer.
That's, the world needs dancers. And a lot of joy derived from dancing.
Very ambidextrous, good hand eye. But right now we just like dancing to whatever Disney
That's
song
fine.
Is on.
That's fine.
And Wicked. We're big Wicked yes. house.
Oh, we haven't delved into Wicked yet. Maybe we should. I tell you what, we're really going to go on a tangent now. Have you seen The Good Dinosaur?
No, you see, we're much more into the Frozen, Wicked, Mulan. We're in that side of the
So we deal. We did Frozen. In fact, Walker calls it Sven. I want to watch Sven. Perfectly. I know what you want to watch. Good Dinosaur, stumbled upon it just on this recent visit to the in-laws, and I have not completed that movie yet without crying, like, or with not crying. I get to the end of that movie every time.
What's it on?
It's Waterworks. It's Disney Plus.
Oh,
it's Disney Plus, and it's just,
we'll give it a shot.
Oh yeah. But just get ready to cry. Like, you're going to cry. It's mm-hmm. it's going to happen, and you just got to lean into it. It's like that and Finding Nemo that are just like,
we watched Finding Nemo today, or she kind of did in the car, which is nice. She's at an age now where she doesn't necessarily know what's kind of going on during a movie, like being able to digest it in full, but she can sit there and watch something for longer than like 5 minutes, where, you know how it was from 1 to 2, they couldn't be like less interested in a movie for more than 5 minutes. You sit them down, you're like, okay, finally. And it's like, okay, nope.
yeah. It's interesting because finding the thing that's going to hold their attention is such a crapshoot. But then at least like Walker watched The Good Dinosaur, I think, 6 times on the ride home from Pennsylvania. Just like restart, restart, restart. I was like, we got to stop. Something else has to be coming out of the back of that iPod in terms of audio, or I'm going to lose my mind. But this is, you know, the joy of having kids. Anyway, I'll say this. I wouldn't worry too much about the grip thing, because Kadick, she's grabbing it, and then chew toy. Immediately chew toy. Oh, like, really? Oh yeah, you gotta get that out of your Yeah, take that grip out of your mouth. We're not doing that. I hope Amanda doesn't listen to this podcast because I'm in big trouble if she does.
I would be so pumped if she was, though. And thanks for and Amanda, make sure to like and subscribe, Amanda.
Leave a 5-star review. I'll tell you what, Smiley, briefly before we get to the meat of this podcast, because we were talking about the state of your golf game last week and you were trending. Found something.
Good.
Mushing the driver, just pumping it out there. Just added 10 grams of weight to the back of the driver, moved the sliding weight over to make it more fade bias, narrowed the stance. And it's like I've never felt more supported by my friends than I did on Saturday when they were just watching me drive. Like, that's the greatest thing I've ever seen. They're like, thanks, guys. We found it.
That's good. It's good to have the fellas really backing you up after good drives, you know?
Dude, nothing gets the fellas going like just a good drive. Like, yeah. It really isn't, you know, it's just a great golf feeling having the boys.
It definitely is. Yeah. I went from like trending to like opposite of trending. And now I have a quite a stretch of golf, like the biggest stretch of golf I've had in quite some time. I'm in Auburn right now, playing at Jason Duffner's Pro-Am tomorrow, which I'm really excited about, supporting that event. And then Tuesday, Wednesday, doing a little Hoopy trip, which I'm pretty excited about.
And who's on that trip? So that's just the boys?
I'm not quite sure yet. But it seems like it's going to be a good time. And I've heard of Hoopy's incredible. Haven't done it yet, so can't wait to report back on thoughts on Hoopy. So really excited. And
I've not done it either, but that's famously, that's Rory's putter cover. That's a great logo, that little onion logo.
Yeah.
So you got to merch out down there.
I'm definitely going to merch out. And then on the weekend, playing with my buddy Matthew Peacher over at Shoal Creek for our members. So
nice.
I've kind of got like way more golf than I've ever played like in quite some time. So really need to tighten it up. So tomorrow's a great day, being a pro-am day.
Yeah.
That it doesn't really matter how you play. You just don't want to embarrass yourself type of thing. It's like you are the pro, you know. That's the one thing that you got to remind yourself sometimes. So tomorrow's going to be a day in which if we can kind of get off to like a good start and a good day as far as just confidence goes, I think we're cruising through the rest of the week. But if tomorrow goes poorly, I think that it could be quite the struggle this week, and I'm going to have to figure something out. So tomorrow could be a day where I just try everything.
Listen, I having seen you play golf, I have no doubt that you're just going to, no matter where it goes, you're going to figure it out.
I'm going to figure it out.
I have faith that. I do love the visual of like you just staring in the mirror in the morning, getting ready. It's like, just remind yourself, like, you're a pro. Like, don't forget that. I'm a pro. Yeah. I get it. Other great thing to report, new putter, like the tinkering. Sometimes you just got to lean into the tinker. Sometimes you get a little lost along the path and you think you have no way back. It's getting dark. And then you pass through the wall and then you're on the other side and you entered like tinkering paradise. And this is the putter, Smiley. I'm happy to report.
Well, there you go. Happy for you. the only thing before we get to the golf is, you know, we like drove into Auburn like late this afternoon, like perfect weather. You know,
it's that time of year.
80 degrees, you know, I got all these kids taking their graduate photos out in the lawn. And it just reminded me, I was like, man, especially like once you like laid eyes on like how young these people are and you just think to yourself, man, it's pretty far removed since I've been in college. But I will say, I saw these guys out here, they're just throwing the football like late in the evening. Oh,
dude.
And I think I did that 4 to 6 times a week, you know, just before we had to get into what we called getting our homework done or studying or having to write a paper, whatever it was, and just burn a good 30 minutes by just throwing the football. He's like, hey guys, you're gonna go toss it outside before we actually got to work. And everybody's like, I got 30 to burn.
Brother, what I wouldn't give to just transport back and just be standing in a little frat courtyard in Carolina,
just tossing
speakers
it
outside, just jamming tunes and just slinging the pigskin around the yard. Some of my fondest memories. Great way to pass time.
I mean, these guys were, they had a perfect triangle going, you know, just one guy to the next. And Almost jumped in, made a little square.
Brought a little tear to your eyes. Oh, yeah. How about this? I've almost buried the lead here coming off our Masters coverage. I got sent a lot of Moon Pie, Smiley. A lot. I'm wearing like a Moon Pie shirt. I got sent a Moon Pie hat. I have a Moon Pie golf towel now. And you'll love this. I'm sampling new Moon Pie flavors. I mean, look how many boxes. I've already opened up two of these Moon Pie boxes. I dug into those a little bit. So here's the good news is I'm not going to be wanting for desserts for a while.
Moon Pie for Halloween.
I might turn into a Moon Pie with the amount of Moon Pies I'm going to consume. But that's the bad news is that I thought I was coming off my yearly week long Moon Pie binge of the Masters. And it ain't over, baby. I'm still binging. So not great for like my plan to get back into shape, but I can't quit them, man. I cannot quit the Moon Pies. I hate to report. Shall we talk about some PGA Tour golf, Smiley? Because we had two first-time winners on the PGA Tour this week, and this is a moment really for you to take a victory lap as you are officially heating up in beer pong terminology with your second one-and-done win of the season, Andrew Novak and Ben Griffin. Get it done at the Zurich Classic. There are a number of things we have to do to kind of tee up this discussion, Smiley. The first is thanks to our friends at Ahead, who we're going to do another expert team segment for Ahead this week. But this one's a little bit different. We're not talking about the caddy. This is a literal team, the only two-man event the PGA Tour has on the calendar for the year, and these guys get it done. So Ahead is a strategic partner for enterprise clients, helping them navigate the path toward digital transformation, much like an expert caddy, reading the course ahead and providing the winning combination of technology and execution. Ahead has one of the most talented rosters of over 1,600 engineers in the world, each one obsessed with client success. More than 3,000 certifications, Ahead's deep technical expertise makes them adept at integrating complex technologies into holistic digital platforms. Learn more at ahead.com. So the expert team this week was Andrew Novak and Ben Griffin. And as you might remember, if you were listening to the show last year, we cold opened with some electric karaoke from Rory McIlroy and Shane Lowry, last year's champs. We have another entry from Ben Griffin and Andrew Novak, and I'm just going to play a little snippet of this and let you be the judge as to how they did against Rory and Shane. So I guess none of these guys played an instrument growing up or had any form of music classes, but that didn't matter because they were focused on playing golf and winning tournaments. So Smiley, let's just kind of start with this is something that we thought, at least on Andrew Novak's side, we thought this was going to happen. I didn't know this was going to happen as fast as it did after the conversation we had last week and the playoff he narrowly lost to Justin Thomas. You obviously did because you called it. What does this sort of represent in terms of a career progress for both these guys and just the validation of being a PGA Tour winner?
I mean, we're always evaluating these guys week in and week out. One of the things I didn't necessarily forecast or see was that neither of these guys could sing. Kind of thought that one of these guys might be able to carry the other. That was a tough scene, boys. I will say that I think Rory and Shane probably closed out Andrew and Ben 5-4. If we're going to compare and contrast,
it might have been 9-7. It might have been like a Victor Hovland, Ludwig Åberg take.
To be fair, this is all about what song you choose. Like that, I understand We Are the Champions may feel like the right song, but if you go with Don't Stop Believing, now you got the crowd into this. You know, like they're singing too. Like you got to go Sweet Child of Mine. Like you got to know what the crowd's gonna give you. Like calling Baton Rouge would have hit because then you could have just stomped around and just did the mic like this, you know. Well,
a couple Carolina kids, like let's do, you know, Gone to Carolina, My Mind, or just jump. Jump. Yeah, I mean, or yeah,
is that the jump song? Was it?
What song? I think you're doing. Is it Van Halen? Jump.
Yep. Yeah, that one. Okay.
We might be the only two people on earth that are worse at karaoke than Andrew Novak and Ben Griffin. Oh, no. I love
karaoke.
Give him some bluegrass tunes or something. A couple Carolina Kids. Novak went to Wofford. Ben went to Carolina. Come on now.
That's something that I must say when I go talk to these fellas. They should have just gone. I understand that that's what they probably should have done, but I thought there was a lot of potential there to just bring the house down, you know.
Fair critique.
Like some Snoop Dogg, some wild stuff, man. Just get the people going.
Yeah, Ben Griffin keeping the aviator shades on in the night with the sun down and doing some Snoop Dogg, that would have been a sight to see. That would have done numbers on the PGA Tour X account, all socials, really. But,
to your point, I mean, this is it's not shocking to see they won, right? Like, these were the two hottest players in the field outside of Rory and Shane. I was a little worried that Andrew just was going to run out of gas, but when you play with the Energizer Bunny and Ben Griffin, who plays every single week, that's kind of like the charge maybe that the batteries needed. And I think a lot of people don't know that these two guys are like really good buddies, like from their time down on the island. I actually have a pretty good story when it comes to these two. So during COVID, before the PGA Tour was back playing, there was an event in Sea Island where they had a bunch of pros play just to try to like get some competitive juices back going before the guys went out and started playing again. I wasn't getting into any PGA Tour events, but my agent said, hey, come down and play just try to get some, rust off. And, there's a guy I'm going to pair you with, a guy named Andrew Novak. And at the time, his wife, I guess his girlfriend at the time, this would have been Maddie, Randy Myers' daughter,
right.
Who eventually went to go work for my agent, who I don't know if she still works there anymore. That's besides the point. Anyways, Andrew and I get paired up together. So him and I are playing like a similar type of deal. Like we're playing best ball. I don't think we did any alternate shot. But besides the story that Andrew carried me and that I played terribly, and I'm very sorry, Andrew, I held you back a year or two in this, is that who was caddying for Andrew Novak during this? Ben Griffin.
No way.
How about that? So Ben Griffin, this is in 2021.
This is while I was working the insurance job.
I'm like 99% sure that he was not playing at the time. I think he was thinking about coming back, but I had known Ben from being on the island, coming out of North Carolina, young player, had spent some time with him on the road here and there, but really had seen him a bunch on the island. And, just didn't ever get it going. And of course, at that time, I think he's done, when he's caddying for Andrew Novak, this isn't like he's caddying for Patton Kizzire, who's like won twice on the PGA Tour. Andrew at the time, he still doesn't have status either. But after playing with him those couple of days, I'm like, this guy is so good. He had Monday qualified a time or two. And I think maybe he had gotten Korn Ferry Tour status, but I knew Andrew Novak was going to be a PGA Tour player for a long time after playing with him for those 2 days. And I feel bad I held him back.
I think we've had this whole story about Ben Griffin is, return to golf. And really, I don't think you've received enough credit because maybe Ben was there that week and just was so inspired by the fact, like, surely Andrew Novak can find a better partner to play with. And maybe I'm that guy. Cause it's not Smiley Kaufman. So let me make my return.
Compadre.
So I think you got to take a little credit there. Yeah. No, that's a fun kind of backstory on these guys.
It's crazy because it just hit my, memory bank either today or yesterday. And I was thinking, well, I remember Ben was caddying somewhere. And I remember thinking, like, why is Ben caddying? Like, this is kind of weird. Because he was, an aspiring tour player. Next thing you know, he's caddying for Novak, which is crazy, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And here they are. They partner up, and a lot of people don't know that they're good buddies. They play a bunch of practice rounds together. I think the one clip I thought was pretty cool from last week at Hilton Head, in the winning interview, Justin Thomas was asked, hey, have you played with Andrew Novak before? It's like, yeah, I actually joined up with him and Ben Griffin at the Travelers last year, and Novak had shot in 59 that day. So he was like, yeah, I've seen him play before. He played really good because him and Ben Griffin were just going at it that afternoon.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's interesting too, because I think it's a guy in Andrew that we've talked about so many episodes this year of just being so close and trying to kind of find, you know, what that first PGA Tour win is going to be, and how are you going to make that breakthrough. And it's sort of a soft entry to this in a way of having a guy there who also plays on tour, who can help manage your emotions or pick you up when you're not hitting it well. And, you know, people talk about whether or not a team win is fully legitimate or counts as a PGA Tour win. Of course, it doesn't in a statistical sense, but in some ways it's like, it's nice to get this one won and in the books to kind of take some of the pressure off. Because, I mean, I don't think this is it for Andrew Novak. I mean, going into this week, he was 11th on the Ryder Cup point standings. You know, like it wouldn't be a stretch at all. He would have to be one of the six captain's picks, but it wouldn't be a stretch at all to make him a captain's pick given his form and his place on that list. This is a guy whose game is trending in a huge way. Mm-hmm. I know we kind of texted about this offline. Like, how close to, I don't think you can call him a lock right now with three majors left, but like, this guy's on your team right now, is he not?
Oh, it's still way too early to say whether he should or should not be on the team. Remember, this guy, how many majors has Andrew Novak played into this point? You know, I don't think he's played more than two would be my guess. I think his whole probably chance, or what do you got for me?
He's played one major, the 2022 U.S. Open, and missed the cut.
So if we're being fair here, and not being prisoner of the moment and not just being just looking at how Andrew's played this, you know, the beginning of the season, I was very critical in that I didn't think Lucas Glover should have been on the team in Rome because he didn't play in any of the majors mm-hmm. that season. He didn't qualify for any of them, but he had a really nice hot streak at the end of the year. I know you know, speaking with captains and all of this and learning about how they pick these rosters, they use a lot of data and analytics to see how players match up with other guys. And I know you know this, but some guys just don't match up with other players mm-hmm. and some guys fit the bill perfectly. You know, there could be let's just use a random name, a Wyndham Clark, right? Who's mm-hmm. Obviously a super talented player, but he may be a guy that matches up really well with a guy who may not have had a better season than an Andrew Novak. I don't know what the answer is going to be as of now, but he was 11th on the points list coming into the week. Yeah. So he's
move up. You think, I mean,
could he qualify? Well, he has an opportunity to, because he's inside the top 50 in the official world golf rankings. I don't know if they get points this week for the world rankings, but if he probably doesn't, I can't imagine they do, right?
I'm trying to remember the exact. I know that we looked at the criteria as it relates to Ryder Cup points. I did not look at the OWGR criteria.
Well, for Zurich, do they get points for Zurich?
You know? I do not know.
I don't think they would.
Let me
right?
Just look this up. Yeah, I don't have that off the top of my head, and nothing's no popping worries. Up right now. But I'd say this: it doesn't change
anything. He's still gonna get three at bats.
And given what you saw this week with the contrasting styles and the way these two guys paired together, not saying Ben Griffin couldn't go out and play well the rest of the season and also make this Ryder Cup team, but assuming that Andrew's probably closer than Ben is right now, what profile of player that is maybe higher on that list could you see Andrew pairing well with on an American Ryder Cup team?
I mean, it's so hard to say, because Andrew's strengths are he's a really good ball striker, and he's been a poor putter to this point, but he's had a really, you know, a better putting season. He's hit it mm-hmm. just as good as he ever has. And you know, Ryder Cup, so you kind of need guys to make putts. So I'm not sure exactly where he slots in with that. When you just look at the golf course, though, Andrew Novak doesn't hit a short, but he flushes it. Probably would pair up well in an altered shot, but it's still way mm-hmm. too early, and I don't want to just say that, you know, that I think Keegan Baddeley is most likely going to go with experience on this team. So a guy like Andrew really, really has to play his way on this team and has to be a shoe-in. He can't be relying on just I've had a really good year, I should make the team. You have to do more than that. You have to go to Quail Hollow and be in contention, you know, or finish you know, have some, a couple top tens, but I think it's going to take him getting into contention in one of these last three majors. Just cause I think Keegan's going to really be relying on experience. That's just my opinion.
Yeah. I think you're 100% right there for all the reasons listed. And it's the route he has to go, to your point, is the one that Wyndham Clark and Brian Harman did a few years back, where it's like, if you go win, you're going to qualify. And Wyndham Clark, in similar fashion, was a guy who whose game trended over the course of that season. And he won at Quail Hollow for what was the Wells Fargo prior to winning the U.S. Open at LACC, and it was that sort of steady build of this guy. We knew he had the talent, but we hadn't seen him, you know, win a golf tournament convincingly prior to you know, that sort of trend in form. It feels like Andrew Novak is kind of on a similar trajectory with the way this season's playing out, and if that run of form continues and he contends or even wins one of these majors, he should be right there and have a chance.
Yeah, it's what a run though he's had. I mean, Farmers, he obviously had a chance. He finished, yeah, I guess, third over there, but he's just gone Heritage. Third, second. He's just gone third, second, first in 3 weeks in a row. I mean, just a really incredible stretch that he's put together. Couldn't be more happy for him. He's a grinder. He's plays the chip on his shoulder type of kid. And really likable too. Very mm-hmm. smart. Love the way he plays. He's fast. And we talked about this last week after Hilton Head. Not many guys have like such, insightful conversations on the golf course. Feels like you're watching Jordan at times when he's just talking through everything that's in his head. And I think that makes it for good TV. And again, I love seeing him win with Ben. And for, I think, just seeing them both kind of push through, knowing that it's hard to win on the PGA Tour and neither of them been able to do it to this point, coming up close multiple times. I could think of Ben Griffin, how close he was in winning in Jackson, I guess, 2 years ago. Kind of let that one get away. He's had a couple other opportunities on some back nines. And, hey, man, it's pretty cool when you got one of your best friends out there and y'all do it together. So it should help them, I imagine, for the next time they have that opportunity. And that was a pretty dang cool putt he had on 17. And if you haven't seen it too, on Ben Griffin's putt, there was an angle they showed where there was like a chick that fell over in the background. Did you happen to see that?
No, I didn't see that.
Dude,
no.
You got it.
Let me show That's this. Amazing.
Well, all right, pull up your Twitter right now. Okay, I just sent this to you.
All right, fantastic. Well, we're doing it live. Yeah, I saw. I thought the funny part that I saw was more so that he was he like turned to find Andrew to celebrate with.
It was a lot going on, but what you don't
see is happening.
There's somebody falling in the background.
Let's see here. Oh. Just a bit outside. Well, there you go. There is a lot happening there. A huge putt essentially wins in the tournament at that point. Did you follow at all the TIO situation with the Højgaard brothers on 18 today?
I was still driving, so I had heard there was a TIO situation. Like I heard he big miss to the left, and then there was a hospitality thing that gave him a much better lie. They pushed it up, they make birdie. They finished second.
They did, and it was
birdie 18, right?
They birdied 18, and it was, I mean, off the tee, like an uncharacteristic huge left miss. Thought the ball might have been out of bounds. Had a whole search party, fans going around looking for it, and I'm you know, kind of split, you know, prepping for the show, doing all sorts of stuff, thinking, all right, they're cooked. Who's up next? They have this thing won, and then you just kind of hear in the background, oh no, wait a second, they're getting this insane relief where they're actually going to have a shot at. I believe it was Nikolai hit the second shot. He did not go for the green. He laid it up, and then Rasmus had a nice wedge in there, and they made birdie. But it was a huge swing in the tournament. If Ben does not birdie 17, and also Jake Knapp kind of in that same group, you know, made a mess of that hole, and they had a chance to maybe tie for second or finish solo second, it would have been very interesting coming down the stretch. But Ben, of course, does make the putt. Andrew can lay up out to the left. They can play the hole, you know, just in a very simple fashion to make sure they win the tournament. But it was wild. It was wild.
Yeah,
and a lot of outrage on the internet about that.
Yeah, which is understandable on that. You liked the Højgaard brothers coming into the week.
So
that was actually one of your better calls. Unfortunately, your pick missed the cut. We'll just briefly mention that. And I think it begs the question now. There probably should be a prop bet up. Is will Smiley win more one and done picks this year, or pick more winners than Charlie miscuts
or makes cuts.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's, yeah. I mean, I am a miscut machine. I had a good laugh about this thing. So I was thinking about the conversation you and Max Homa had a while back where you were like comparing your seasons of miscuts. I'm like, I'm right there with one and done this season.
Are we ready to build the graphic?
We might have to build the graphic because it is a tough scene. I mean, God bless Tommy Fleetwood. And I think Sepp Straka had a big finish earlier in the season that helped me out a little bit. Otherwise, I'd be picking Korn Ferry Tour events right now. That's where I'd be. It's bad. It's very,
very tough
bad.
Too, because 30 under is hard to pick. This week on the Korn Ferry Tour was quite the scene.
Insane.
Arlington every year, man. Apparently that golf course is a pitch and putt.
Well, let's that's actually a perfect sort of transition there because, I was laughing at this. The headline this week, or the not necessarily the headline, but one of the headlines was Blades Brown, who shot the lowest round by a player under 18 on the PGA Tour or Korn Ferry Tour. So I see this because it was his opening round, and I guess it maybe didn't hit my radar until Saturday. And I look at the leaderboard, and I'm like, how in the world is he? Like, he was like tied for 10th or further down the leaderboard. And I look at Johnny Kiefer's round, who eventually wins a tournament. Johnny Kiefer this week shot 63, 61, 66, 64 to win this tournament at 30 under. I mean, can you imagine that?
That's insane.
Blades was like 61, 67, 66, 63. He finishes tied for second at 27 under. But I mean, he needed another 63 to back up the 61 he opens with to get it to where he did. So I mean, just a wild, wild week there. But the interesting thing with Blades, and I think I just kind of want to tee you up here so you can explain this a little bit, is that Blades is trying to kind of figure out how he's going to have some sort of status going forward on a tour, right? And we've kind of documented this since he made his professional debut at the Amex, and the way he has to kind of balance sponsor exemptions on the Korn Ferry Tour versus the PGA Tour. And so the Korn Ferry Tour caps sponsor exemptions at 4 for the entire season. He's now used 3 of those, and he is currently at 185, has 185 points, and he needs 238 to earn a special temporary membership that allows him unlimited sponsor exemptions going forward for the rest of the season. So he's 53 points away from that. So you might be saying, okay, wow, you know, he's got to do it in this next start. That is not the case, because by virtue of that T2 this week, he gets in next week without needing a sponsor exemption. Can you just explain the strategy, you know, from Blade's perspective, what he's trying to achieve here and how he can use the rest of his starts this season to at least earn his Korn Ferry Tour status heading into the following season?
Wait, what did he finish this week, you said?
Tied for second at 27 under.
He finished T2. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. There were 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 players tied for second. Josh McCreal, Zach James, Julian Suri, Tyson Alexander. Yeah.
Okay. God, dude, Tyson Alexander. He's won there twice. He absolutely tears that place up. All right. So Blades is in a super unique position because it reminds me a lot of when Jordan, after he had turned pro, and he was trying to figure out, all right, what do I do here? Because I believe he had just played well on the Korn Ferry Tour, maybe in like Bogota, finished somewhere inside the top 25. I think it was probably somewhere in the top 5, really, or maybe it's Panama. And so he's got that decision of, okay, do I go play in Puerto Rico or do I take this top 25 exemption into the next week and keep on trying to parlay good play on the Korn Ferry Tour into like special temporary status into eventually getting your card through the Korn Ferry Tour. So what Jordan Spieth did, if you all remember, he went and played in Puerto Rico and finished second to Scott Brown, I believe, who won. So there was no right answer. Like, for instance, this week, Blades Brown has a sponsor's invitation to the CJ Cup at the Byron Nelson in Dallas. So the situation that he has got to figure out now is, okay, I have 3 sponsors exemptions I've already used on the Korn Ferry Tour, like you talked about. And there, of course, he gets one more, but after a top 25, now that's the free exemption. So for example, for now Blades, he will have 5 total, I guess, opportunities without Monday qualifying. So it makes a lot of sense for him to go and use that, but it's the same type of the rolling of the dice where he could have gone and played in the Bayern, and who knows what happens. Maybe he goes and finish second. There's no right answer or right or wrong answer in what you do here, but I think most people would suggest is to go to Mexico, which he is doing. I texted his agent. He's going to go play in Mexico, and he needs 53 points, which I have no idea like how many that is. But the one thing I'll leave you with here is remember all the stuff with Luke Clanton we talked about with him being an amateur and the top tens that he had and how they didn't carry over for sponsors in invitations and his limitations of how many he could have. You could have up to seven, but even though he top 10, it didn't necessarily carry over to the next event. You have to earn them as a professional. And so that's where it's important that Blades Brown, the decision that he made to turn pro. So if he was an amateur in this situation, he would not have gotten that top 25 invite.
It's interesting. I'm trying to look at this math right now to figure out where the split would have been this week. And I believe, yeah, it was between 10th and 18th. So there's a huge group of guys tied for 10th and a huge group of guys tied for 18th. I think I have this correct, right? So Samuel Anderson. Yeah. So the T10s this week, that group there that went, I guess, from 10 to 17 earned 60.75 points. And the T18s, well, it looks like there's a group of six of them there, seven of them there, earned 43 points. So you got to figure it's somewhere maybe in that kind of 15 to 20 ish range, probably better than that next week to really lock it up. But I guess the good news now being he has two starts. What's that?
The bad news is his birthday is May 21st. It's currently April 27th. So he would not be able to take up special temporary status with the tour until he turns 18, yes. Which I think is also wild. Like, why do we need an ID card on
Yes. Yeah, that one I can't give you as much information on, but I do know this week's performance, of course, significantly reduces the pressure to have to go do that.
So let's say that he does finish inside the top 15 this week and gets special temporary status. He'll have to wait, let's say, three weeks that he could be playing on the Korn Ferry Tour to earn it, because he doesn't get any of these points. Remember how dumb all this is. Like, he can't earn any points until he gets this special temporary status.
Yes,
that's correct, right? Or he's a pro. Does he?
Well, you know what?
I don't think he gets any of the points, Charlie, because we've been over this with like Akshay back when he was going through all this. Like, he didn't get any of the points he accumulated.
I'll say hand up, Smiley, because that whole Akshay story was so, you know, convoluted to follow, and like the things that governed it, and, you know, the opposite field, the difference in opposite field points. So I can't say definitively how this is going to work out with Blades. But
they're just hypothetical points he's earning. And so you earn all these hypothetical points to get to what would be like a special temporary card. So that gives you status, which is what he's like. I think regardless now, he's probably good, because I think top 200 gets him. There's like a loophole that they figured out in all this. As long as he got top 200, he would be basically he would have Korn Ferry Tour status the following year. So he will have status next year on the Korn Ferry Tour if he MCs this all the way through, but clearly that's probably not going to happen, as he's very good golfer.
Yes. Yeah. Just good to see him kind of, you know, playing well in an event, finding a groove, making sure that we will see him out there. Cause I don't want to say we doubted that, but just early goings, trying to kind of figure out which path he was going to find. And it looks like this one is going to be more certain after at least two more starts on the Korn Ferry Tour for the season. So that's Blades. Smiley, there is a story that's, you know, kind of big picture golf right now, applies to this season, which is interesting, but about the Tour Championship playoff format that was floating around. Dylan DeCher wrote this for golf.com, and just some reporting on what's been said publicly around a playoff format that should change and could change for this season, which is, you know, unprecedented in a lot of different ways. Not since the TGL hammer rule change in midseason that we've seen such a progressive and fluid changing of the rules. But, you know, effectively, to summarize that story, there were quotes from Scottie Scheffler that was basically saying, there were some really good ideas. There are some really silly, dumb ones too. And we're getting closer to, you know, where we need to be on that. There are quotes from Adam Scott, who, you know, effectively said, as much as people are clamoring for match play, the players did not want to play a format for the Tour Championship that was materially different from stroke play that they play all season long. They found that to be silly. There were some thoughts from Kevin Kisner that says he's got an idea as to what it could be, but he didn't want to spoil it before it being officially announced. There are apparently some meetings that involved, you know, Sam Burns and other committee members. Yeah, the Player Advisory Council met at the RBC Heritage and reached that preferred format. There are rumors that there could be a narrowing down of the field size, like that you're still playing stroke play, but you go 16 to 8 to 4. And I don't know how that works as a televised product. So given these reports, Smiley, and your thoughts on this previously, where do you kind of net out here as to what you'd like to see and what you've heard is actually going to happen?
Well, you know, I don't have my ears to the ground quite as much as I did when I was probably out on the road, when you kind of heard all the, you know, kind of the executive talk of what they've been trying to push for from a network standpoint. And of course, NBC has the playoffs this year. CBS has it next year. And I think it alternates for future playoff events. I know TV pushed for, I think, some match play on the weekend, but the players push back on this, kind of like you mentioned. You know, they play an entire year based off of stroke play, and the players just couldn't wrap their head around, you know, determining their entire season with match play. And it can be kind of a clunky TV product if you lose the 1 and 2 seeds, is what kind of I believe Adam Scott kind of noted in one of these little snippets of one of these interviews. Listen, I think if you get the 8 guys playing on Sunday, or if they cut it to 4, I'm not sure exactly how many it was, I think it could be really interesting, but it just kind of feels like a Monday qualifier to me. You know, it's just like a shootout. It's just like a member guest type of, you know, one day shootout for however much money they're playing for. I know they're not going to start, right, Charlie, with at square, like at even, like if they all qualify for that Sunday, is it a one day takes all type of deal? That kind of seems stupid. Like if you're basing an entire year off of stroke play, well, why would you just, you know, change your entire way you judge the format? If you cut down to a certain number, you have to assume it's based off of how they play Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and then you get to Sunday, and they, instead of having 8 guys having opportunity, it doesn't make sense. Like, none of it really does make sense to me.
Well, it's interesting because I'm very intrigued to see something definitive on what this is going to be, because, you know, all these suggestions could be a very compelling television product, but then you kind of have to ask yourself, like, who is this product for? Because if part of the reason why you're going to Atlanta, Georgia in mid to late August is because of the support you're getting from Coca-Cola and other, you know, local sponsors and all the hospitality they get out of this, it doesn't feel like a very compelling product to have, you know, your tents, you're camped out at this one spot and you're just seeing 4 guys come through on Sunday. And if you're, you know, someone who's a fan who's kind of trying to walk around the grounds and follow groups, I mean, I thought there were a lot of people at the Masters following around Rory and Bryson. I mean, can you imagine if they're just, you know, 2 twosomes? I just don't know how that works from a fan perspective. And so, and it's okay if everyone agrees that they're going to do something creative on site to make it worth their time. And, you know, this is really and truly going to be this big, compelling television product. But I just don't know how you solve for that. And so if it is indeed like a staggered, like we keep starting strokes for Thursday, Friday,
no, with a field 32. There's no more starting strokes is what they're talking about. No more starting strokes, no more match play. And 8 players advance to Saturday and the top 4 advance to Sunday. And then 5 to 8 basically play for the final position.
But then, so what reward do you get for having for being number one on the list?
That's what makes no sense. Is that's what Scotty was complaining about at Eastlake this year, talking about how good his year was, and said basically, you know, it's you know, I have a 2-stroke lead, and I think the argument that we all said was it feel like he should probably have closer to a 6-to-8 shot lead starting this golf tournament. And that's kind of what he kind of complained about. But we also know how stupid it was when our boy Stevie Sands got the whiteboard up, you know, running, crunching all the numbers, trying to figure out, okay,
who's finishing
Justin
where?
Rose can win the tournament, but he can't earn enough points based off his starting position in the FedEx Cup to win the tour championship. So Tiger Woods or Justin Thomas is going to be the champion. That's a terrible format, like how that is. I personally feel that the starting strokes thing, I know people hate it, but at least when you turn on the TV, it looks like you know what's going on, right?
I agree. I mean, I think the suggestion I make is very similar to what you're just outlining there, which is to say that the starting strokes don't have to be the same every year. Like that whatever you want to do some sort of like Steve Sands whiteboard thing that happens behind closed doors that none of us see, and then we show up and it's like, guess what? This year, Scotty's starting 16 under. You know, and whoever's a second is they're at 10 under, and just essentially quantifying based on the FedEx Cup points list for the year.
Well,
what the actual it's representative of the and so then, but the problem is like it creates a snoozer of a tournament if someone like Scotty dominates the way he did last year, and there's no real compelling reason to watch it. And so the second thing would be like, so what do? You give him a bye? So if I'm Scotty Scheffler. And it's like, okay, I don't have to play Thursday, Friday. I just get to fast forward to Saturday. Is that helpful? Like, do I want to be kind of playing, getting in a rhythm the first 2 days? You know, or do I want to show up cold and some guy can come from 30 or 25 who kind of found a rhythm and played the course and got a feel for it on Thursday and Friday, and they can race past me on Saturday because they're kind of ramping up to playing their best golf and I'm just getting started. I don't know what the answer is there.
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly what that is, but the two biggest things that come to mind in all of this is that the PGA Tour's tagline in this is it's a season-long race to the FedEx Cup. I think the tagline and the branding of all this is where they run into problems in all this, because the players feel like the playoffs is the season-long race, and and it is. That's what the slogan says. The problem, I think, is can you find a way to make the playoffs completely separate from the tour champ or from the overall regular season? You've got to find a way to make the regular season title end and then the playoffs be just a totally different format, to where, okay, this is, you know, you might have two completely separate winners. And I don't know if that's the right or wrong thing to do. But right now, it seems that seems to be the issue with me. And then also, I think, like you said a second ago, I think Eastlake's an incredible venue. But if you've been in Atlanta in late August, there couldn't be a worse place to be as far as weather goes. And same goes with Memphis. Just, I mean, overbearingly hot. Yeah. I think you get the West Coast, you got going up north and playing. It feels like that is the way the tour should find a way to either get on the West Coast in prime time, play on some cool, you know, whether it's Pebble Beach. We've talked about this before.
Yeah.
But if you fix the venue, you fix where, you know, the potential way this whole thing is branded and separating the regular season and the playoffs, I think the fans will be like, all right, cool. I'll sign up for like sick golf course and like really good crowds, right?
Yeah, I mean, just like, you know, three golf courses you haven't seen before. There's an intrigue factor, and it's in a unique sort of place. You touched on it a little bit there, and you know, analyzing the way you can make this all work. And it's something that, you know, I think I said before on some of these previous shows, where it's like the international football model of like league competition and cup competition, in my opinion. And honestly, the way, you know, you probably right size that is you make the regular season money more lucrative. Like if I could have swap anything out and make any changes I want to, I make the regular season the FedEx Cup and that has this big payment. And then I take Comcast and say, these are the Comcast playoffs. It's three events. We're going to fun places. And there is a big purse assigned for, you know, the guys that made the kind of cut and made it into this thing. But it's, we're starting fresh. You guys are in. You know, you got all your money from playing well for the season through the FedEx Cup.
Yeah.
And now we're just going to do something fun and different, you know, to kind of close.
Here's an argument.
Out.
Here's an argument to that is that when they flash all the winners of the Tour Championship at the end of the year, you know, as a viewer, for the most part, there's been like a couple instances where maybe a Billy Horschel didn't necessarily have the best year, but got extremely hot, mm-hmm. had an incredible playoffs, and end up accumulating enough points with like quadruple amount of points because he won, what was it, two or three different times during that whole stretch of like four events.
Yeah.
Where he won the Tour Championship at the end of the year. But for the most part, when you go and look at all of the winners from the Tour Championship since they started this, for the most part, it's been one of the best players that season. And what I would hate to happen is if you got on a run, and maybe this wouldn't happen, is that let's say you have the regular season champion, then you go to this playoffs like you're talking about, and then you don't necessarily have the player that's won – that's had the best season win. And I know that's what we talk about. Like, hey, if you're cool with that, like in soccer, yeah.
I think it's more intriguing because I think it's like, you know, because we've seen Cinderella teams make cup runs that are improbable, you know, juxtaposed against their actual season. Shoot, I'm a Tottenham fan. Tottenham damn near got relegated from the Premier League this season, but they have this one last shot to win this European Cup competition that could salvage the whole season for the fan base. So if you're a player who's had up and down form, but you made it into whatever the cutoff we're going to make for these playoff events, if it is indeed 70, you made it in the top 70, and the most important thing remains the FedEx Cup. And that is the thing we're saying is this is our season-long race. Last year, Scottie Scheffler, you win it going away. You get the most amount of money.
Like, you feel like you got a chance. Fine. Like,
but then
like if you make the playoffs, like, you legitimately have a chance.
Boy, and it just becomes sort of a fun thing of, like, guess what? Billy Horschel had a great run and won it this season. We're not saying it's like, it, you know, this let's call it the Comcast Cup. We're not saying the Comcast Cup represents, you know, a whole season of dominance. It just meant that this group of players made it into the top 70. And then we did this fun little season ending thing that had weighted money against it. And you had the Cinderella winner. Some years it's going to just be Scottie Scheffler that wins with the FedEx Cup and the Comcast Cup. Other years you're going to have some sort of variance. I think it's a compelling storyline. Now, the only thing that you maybe lose a little bit there is historic winners of each of these events, but you almost get that, unless you're going to cut the field size down, you almost get that back a little bit. Like, because like last year, it's Colin Morikawa should have won the Tour Championship, but they altered the format of the starting strokes. When you look back at the history of the event, Scottie Scheffler was the winner of that event. Like, does that barely represent the tournament history? I don't know. I think
you make a good point there.
Anything you do is going to feel contrived. I'd just be leaning into something that is, you know,
at least with match play, you know, it's
totally.
There's no explaining that. It's,
and there
it's
you
like,
go.
Hey, that's upsets happen. We watch March Madness every year.
And that's another thing you could say is like, hey, if you make it completely distinct, it's like, okay, FedEx Cup wraps at the Wyndham and that's the season standings and all the, you know, the money payouts. But all you guys qualify for this match play tournament. I mean, can you imagine a month long match play tournament? That, you know, where you take breaks and you give guys buys through to certain weeks. Now you'd have to kind of, again, you'd have to tournament history, change some stuff around, but that would be incredibly compelling television.
I thought the other format that they kind of presented with the match play, this is what TV presented. And then of course the players didn't like the match play idea, but I really liked the idea of 32 guys making it to the Tour Championship. I think it was 32 and then they or 30 and then they cut it down to 16 or something like that. Maybe some buys here and there, but match play on the weekend. I just felt like, man, how cool would that have been? Cause you know, when these guys would step up on the tee, how often do you see, you know, Scottie Scheffler going up against Xander Schauffele in a match? Who cares if it's the quarters? Like, I would watch that. I would be very intrigued by it. And I would like to see how they handle themselves. Like right from the get go, are they, Are they fist bumping? Like these guys have been teammates. You know, I want to see them, you know, Rory McIlroy and Shane Lowry go at each other. That would be fun to watch.
Well, undoubtedly. I mean, I think, for the most part, I think golf fans miss having match play on the calendar. And I think some of these, you know, the
it's not a perfect TV thing. And that's what the argument you could make.
If we're talking about product, like let's find a way to make this thing compelling, because it's a format that is unique and different. And I think like when they had it before, not to say those guys didn't want to win that, it was one of these elevated larger purse WGC events, right? But you know, there still was sort of this, like if you did it at the end of the year with more money on the line, and to your point, you're getting guys that normally would not play against each other. I mean, like Scotty and Sam Burns squaring off and Cam Young and Rory, or I don't know, it was Scotty and Rory in the semifinal, the last match play, and Sam Burns, Cam Young in the final, I believe. I think I had that right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that one I think was, you know, it's just you're getting these matchups that are completely unique to other types of team golf. I think that's you got to figure out how to solve the TV thing on the back end of that deal. It's just too, you know.
we definitely talked about this a lot, and I still don't think we really understand what the format is that's being presented. So let's wait for more reports to come out on this. And I think we both feel like this is a no-brainer to get the venue right, and then go from there. Not to say, like, I love East Lake. I think it's a fantastic golf course. But you don't catch many cool days in August. And I think that having some juice and having the people out there, it definitely means something. I do think the tour should do a better job of going to those big cities.
Well, Smiley, we have a couple of things to hit on as we kind of trend toward the latter half of the show. A little NFL draft talk, a lot of content coming out of the draft this year. And then I'm joined by Bryn Walker Collins, fellow Tar Heel and a former player on the LPGA, who's providing a little insight on the first major of the year for the women, the Chevron Championship. So excited to share that conversation with you, a little insight on a wild five-way playoff for the first major of the year that unfolded in pretty bonkers fashion. Before we do that, though, Smiley, got to talk to you about our friends at House of Atlas. You've not received the razors. You look clean-shaven. I feel like you have some experiences you can share with us about your House of Atlas, your razors, the shave cream, the aftershave, the whole nine yards.
Yeah, I opened the shaving cream, and like immediately when I put it on the face here, the scent was terrific. An incredible man scent. And I demanded that my wife from the other room was like, Fran, you gotta come in. She's like, what? And I was like, you gotta smell my face. So she's like, yeah, it smells great, but don't yell at me to come in the other room to smell my face again.
Well, and then the shave, right? Like it's a nice glide. Yeah. Whatever they're using there is fantastic.
Yeah, it's good. And then the aftershave, which I've never had like a cream aftershave. So that was like a little different. And I'm a big like lotion for my face guy. We've talked about dry skin. So I really liked like the lotion feel of that, where other times it's been like,
it stings.
Kind of like the sticky, stinging thing. I didn't get that sense at all. Felt like I walked away smelling great, good clean shave. It's a good start. Love the House of Atlas.
There is something like old-timey, like old golf locker room-ish about the stingy aftershave, but it stings. And I do not like you know, using a razor on my face and then immediately putting something on that makes it sting. I am also a lotion guy. So that was a pleasant surprise here. It's like, you never know what you're going to get in the aftershave department. This one smells good and feels good.
Yeah.
So there's an offer attached to the Smiley, as we've mentioned several times on the show. And I don't know where we netted out on numbers, but there is a code you can use and
somebody's
go to
got a comment here. How much they're getting off.
People could just be robbing House of Atlas blind, but you know, we're just sending you, we get some good raises and good stuff like that. So for a limited time, they're offering 15%, maybe 30% off your first order when you purchase any razor kit in the before and after set, which includes the precision shave cream and calming aftershave. Use code SMILEY at houseofatlas.com. That's HOUSEOFATLAS.com with promo code SMYLIE for 15%, maybe 30% off your new razor kit and before and after set. Stop wasting money and time on shaving products that don't look good, aren't effective, and cost way too much. Visit houseofatlas.com today.
You know, it's like look good, play good is always been the saying here. We're going to add look good, smell good, play good, because you smell good after using that shaving cream in the aftershave.
Yeah, it's
and
it's,
you look good too, because
and you look good. Yeah. I've been toying with I leaned back into the full beard Rego, and then I realized I hated it. So I'm kind of tinkering with the facial hair, but I do know that you know the trim down here and up here, the House of Atlas product, top tier. So check them out, houseofatlas.com. NFL draft, Smiley, your thoughts? It was Mel Kiper. What are we doing? What are we doing with Mel Kiper?
Oh, man. He acted like he was like this NFL genie, man, when it came to evaluating quarterbacks that he knows all. It's like, man, it's like the hardest thing to figure out is how these guys are going to do, like what team they end up at, whether it's going to work out. Some of these guys come from very simple schemes in college, and then they go, and next thing you know, they're having to memorize 20 words for one play, and hey, you got about 70 more of those, and you got to know what everybody's doing. It's a really hard evaluation. I think Mel seemed to think that, oh, I know this player is going to be really good, and these guys have no idea what they're talking about.
Well, he's always been right, like Jimmy Clausen.
Yeah. Or Patrick Mahomes.
Well, I mean, I think that's the point. Like, it was very bold of Mel to sit up on that set and say that the NFL has been terrible at evaluating quarterbacks for 50 years. When, look, I'm not expecting Mel to get every single draft prognostication right, but you can't say that and also have, you know, the good thing about Mel Kiper
about all the Shedeur Sanders stuff.
Yeah, the Shedeur Sanders one, and everyone.
That's what like this whole rant was kind of stemmed from all this. And I haven't really watched him play enough to know where he should have been drafted. So I'm not sitting here telling you he should have been drafted in the fifth round or not. But what I will tell you is that, you know, we had talked about at the beginning of this is that I'm having a boy in October. If my boy ever called a future NFL pick with a number that he shouldn't have had on his phone and videoed himself and posted it, or whether he posted it or not, as like a funny joke type of deal, boy, oh boy, I don't care how old he is, you better drop a pants and we're getting the belt out and you're getting a whipping.
Well, and I think the thing you omitted there was like, and if you were also the defensive coordinator for the Atlanta Falcons, like, I mean,
it's a tough scene, man. Like
the setup there to like have found the number on your dad's iPad and took it down, and the Falcons released a statement. They said no disciplinary action will be taken for the defensive coordinator, which means that, well, I mean, he must have told them internally. He was like, we're going to take care of this in-house, and it ain't going to be pretty for him. And so, yeah, I guess he called Shedeur. He posted about it. But so how do you think – I was trying to figure out how the video got discovered, because surely it looked like one of his friends was recording it. I think it was probably like a – maybe like a Snapchat screen record scenario or
– Yeah. All right. So who feels worse after all this went down? The defensive coordinator – son, I don't know his name, or the night Rory McIlroy makes his putt and Luke Potter sitting there on the couch watching the kid from Texas at the Players saying, hey, you're never going to win the Masters, Rory, after he hooked it in the water. And then he wins, what is it, 3 weeks later, he wins the Masters. Which guy felt worse, do you think, that day after? Just the overall Monday – scaries, or whatever you want to call it, Sunday scaries.
Well, you know, look, as a college kid who once did dumb stuff, commenting on college kids who did dumb stuff, I'd say they're...
Who would you rather be in this situation?
I think it's... okay, I'd say it this way. Like, I don't
think there's a right answer.
I assume defensive coordinator's son. I love that. We didn't even bother to like look up his name. I don't care. I assume the defensive coordinator's son. It's not like he's displaying the intelligence or the background of someone who is eventually going to be a coach in the NFL someday. We'll love to be proved wrong on that, but I think he's probably going to go, you know, work in sales or something, or, you know, who knows, real estate. But whatever it is, it's like, we're going to forget this guy's name pretty quick. Luke Potter theoretically wants to play professional golf. And you know whose name's not going to be like off the record books quickly in the game of pro golf? Rory McIlroy's. And every time Luke Potter goes, you're the guy that heckled Rory McIlroy when you played
literally
in Texas.
3 weeks before you won the Masters.
And then like, you won the Masters.
It's iconic. Like, it really is.
I really
put a plaque on 18.
I don't think Luke Potter ever lives that down for as long as he decides to play golf.
Put a plaque on 18 behind the tee. Luke Potter stood here and said Rory McIlroy wouldn't win the Masters, and then little asterisks after won the Masters 3 weeks later.
they should have taken his friend's phone and bronzed it and just left it right there where Rory took it. The statue should be actually of Rory reaching out and taking the kid's phone.
I mean, I hope the kid gets out there and makes the PGA Tour, but I'm not rooting against the kid at all. It's just a terrible position of like, oh boy.
Yeah.
Really ate the words in that one. At least he didn't have to dial the phone. It was just one of those blurted out situations, maybe, where I think if you look at these side by side, I would say I would probably lean more the kid who actually like found his dad's iPad. This seems much more like a mission. So I'm going to say this kid, I would say, was worse. But in a context with golf, you're definitely not wrong.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, neither of them in classic college kid fashion, I don't think either of them thought through much like what their plan was going to be after they did this thing. I was like, oh, yeah, like, would have been really great if I played the scenario out in my head a little more. Equally tough scenes. But I think, Luke having to like go out and probably play golf with Rory McIlroy at some point in his life is it's going to be tough for him. So best of luck to both of them and piecing that back together. Good of him to apologize, sure, as well. I think, man, that Browns quarterback room is going to be interesting. And they took Dylan Gabriel.
They got a starting five, man.
Their quarterback room is, I think I have this right off top of head. Deshaun Watson, who I think is still recovering from an Achilles tear. Kenny Pickett, Joe Flacco, Dylan Gabriel, Shedeur Sanders.
Who starts? Joe?
Who do you think starts week one for the Browns? That's probably a good question. You think Joe? I think if Kenny Pickett Kenny Pickett cannot win the starting job for that team, I don't know. That's a tough scene.
I feel like we probably have some Steelers that listen to the pod. Let us know if you think Kenny Pickett can win that job. I don't have an opinion.
First round pick a few years ago. I mean, think he's got enough.
Listen, if Mel Kiper thought he was a first round pick, then he's going to become a Super Bowl winning MVP.
That's right. I should go back and check the tape on that and see what Mel thought about it. Yeah, that was a wild scene. I was watching that unfold from the golf course. I'm just, this is insane. But yeah, it is what it is.
All right. So what we got on deck this week? We got Crenshaw on the feeds, and then I will get together. We'll bring you all some form of interview this week, and
that's right.
And then an O'Hoopy and member recap for me this week. So I'll let you know if I'm quitting the game or turning pro.
Yeah, this is very. I see what you did here. I'm now understanding what you did here. As you just scheduled a bunch of stuff during Craig Ranch week, so you didn't have to talk about TBC Craig Ranch. So kudos to you. Well played, Smiley. And looking forward to all that content this week. And now we'll flip it over to this conversation I had with Bryn Walker Collins recapping the Chevron Championship. So enjoy that, and we will talk to you, I guess, on Wednesday with some more conversations. And if you've already watched our Ben Crenshaw interview on YouTube, you're all done and dusted there. But for the podcast listeners, you'll be able to hear some of that conversation we had with Ben at Augusta a few weeks ago. So enjoy the conversation with Bryn now. We're doing something a little bit different here on the Smiley Show as we're coming off the first women's major of the 2025 season. And to do so, I'm joined by someone who played on the LPGA. She is on the board of the Annika Foundation. She played a Q school at the original host venue of this major. But most importantly today, She played golf at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. We are both J school grads. Bryn Walker Collins, so happy to have you on the show today because we had a winner. We had a North Carolina winner on the PGA Tour. Ben Griffin got it done. It's always a great day to be a Tar Heel.
Big, big day. Great day to be a Tar Heel. Pump for Ben. Congrats to Ben. That was awesome. And Novak, I know they both have been waiting for that win. So that was really cool to see them get it done. And yeah, always good day to be a Tar Heel, but extra, extra great today. So it's awesome. Pump for them.
Big win for that program. Ben sunk a big putt on the 17th hole to get that done. But we're here to talk women's majors, the Chevron Championship played at the club at Carlton Woods in the Woodlands, Texas. And Bryn, there are a lot of different directions I want to go in this conversation, but I think the place to start is just unpacking a bonkers five-woman playoff. And so you're at your parents' right now. You got some exciting stuff on the horizon this week. So you're catching up on this in the back end. I just want you to take me through the roller coaster of emotions you experienced in watching this playoff unfold.
Yeah, it was crazy because I recorded it and didn't look at like any social media or anything. I didn't want to see it for a while. So I had a long travel day. And then, I'm like watching it, trying to catch up. And I'm like, what's going to happen? And I sort of saw the recordings going long, but I'm like, I don't know what that could be. And watching the end of it. And of course, I was like really pulling for Lindy Duncan because like, what a story, like played with her on that.
But she went to Duke though.
I mean, put that aside a little bit, but she a little bit earlier than me, so try to put that aside. But I was kind of pulling for her because, like, underdog story, really cool for her, and she seemed to be just loving it the whole week. So, but then, yeah, you get to the last hole, and you think Jutanagren's gonna just pull it off easy up and down. Like, she hit a 3-wood. Everyone's trying to get there with driver, and she had 3-wood, and then was it iron? Yeah, she had an iron into that, and then Duff's
love chip. Did you feel like she was playing fast there to you? I think that was the general consensus, or maybe that she was bothered in some way, shape, or form by the bleachers being so close to her. What was your take on what happened there?
Maybe, but like she's so experienced. She has so much experience. I was like, I don't know if it's sort of in your mind, but maybe the drop was a little bit weird of a lie. They didn't really talk about that at all. Who knows? Or it could have just been one of those moments where you're just like, how the heck did that happen? You know, like golf is like that. So yeah. I was shocked. That was crazy because the ball barely moved, you know, and then she chips again because you thought she had it in the bag, at least to be in at 8-under, you know, and then she bogeys, which is crazy to have her distance, and then you have the playoff, and then Duncan comes in and you're like, oh my gosh, she might miss or make this eagle putt and win it outright, and then leaves herself like a heart attack of a putt coming back, you know, and makes that. So that was really neat. And then you get into the playoff and five person playoff, like how often do you see that? It's crazy. So I think
a major, I mean, you know, that for a regular event that's insane, but let alone a major.
Yeah, so you throw the major in there and you add a lot of stakes and they're all going back. I'm like, how long is this going to take to get all of them back there and everything? So and then you kind of could see from the tee shots positioning wise, you know, two of them had to lay up, and then you thought that was crazy enough. And then they all get to the green and you're like, is par going to get them? Is everyone going to make par and get them to another? And then you have Sago that makes the putt and makes 30, but it was like, it shows you short game, I guess, but I don't know if it's nerves at the end for all these players, but that was crazy.
Well, let's just set the table there a little bit for those who didn't watch. If you did, I mean, it was a bonkers scene on the green, really. So I was flipping back and forth between the Zurich and the Chevron, and the place I arrived as this tournament was concluding was with all the balls in the fairway and all five women hitting their approach shots, and watching the approach that Ronan Yin, one of the brightest young stars in this game, hits into that pin location and gets it to stop. And she ends up, you know, 10 or 15 feet maybe behind the hole or above the hole, rather. And you're thinking she's got this thing in the bag, especially because Lindy Duncan and I believe Kim laid up. And then we have two approaches that go long and you're back up in the bleachers. Jutanagren's in the close to the same position where she just flubbed a chip. She's thinking about that. And then you had this sort of putt off of sorts where three putts were on the same line and reading it different ways, hitting different putts. And you know, the last thing in the world, it seems like, especially the way Mao Saigo plays on Sunday, you're wondering, you know, is that you're heading to a playoff, not a ton of confidence, but she's the one who kind of comes out of it and wins this thing. What was watching all those putts, especially the three above the hole and specifically Ronan Ying three putting there, you know, what do you make of that pressure type of situation? And you're playing alongside another woman you think's on a similar line, but it's tough to exactly extract what pace she's hitting it at, what she's trying to, you know, what line she's taking. Like watching what unfolded there, what did you make of that entire sequence?
I always found it very hard as a player trusting watching somebody else's line, because like you could just miss it a little bit on the putter face and it's going to roll a different way. So I always found that very difficult, unless you're like, this is the best putter on tour and like there's no doubt they're hitting this great.
Yeah.
But even then, in that pressure pack moment, you don't know. So I thought it was really interesting, though, even to go back to the 18th hole when they were all playing the 18th hole, all their putts were fast. If you notice,
yes,
they were all past hole. And I'm just wondering if it dried up a little bit, the greens got quicker throughout the day. I don't know. But then, yeah, above the hole, you would have thought that they all kind of learned. And I think to see Yin go past that far, it might have made them slightly nervous to be more aggressive. But and then Lindy Duncan didn't make her part. But I was like, there's something around this hole or something. I was wondering if Sago was going to even make her birdie putt. But yeah, the ones above the hole, the only thing I can think is like it was a touchy putt to be above the hole. And now you watched one person putt it at – there's so many different lines you can take at different speeds and you're trying to alter your line on that. And then they got a little bit off. And then, yeah, I think Rinyan, she just kind of, I think maybe it was the pressure or like she just really wanted to make it and just have it done with and win it right there. Kind of like you saw Duncan on the 18th. They just got quick and they didn't know how to handle them. But yeah, that was unbelievable.
Yeah.
And then her, like, you just thought she had it in the bag. That was what was crazy.
100%. And I do want to talk a little bit about the venue later in this conversation, but I do think that at least that 18th hole is a pretty dramatic scene for you know, deciding a major championship, because it's so difficult. You know, the distance they're approaching that green with, they're trying to hit it in two, it's so hard to stop the golf ball. And where that pin's placed, where it's, you know, it's up front enough to where it's you know, Ronan Ying's shot barely covers the front edge and still ends up behind the hole. And then you see two other approaches that just have no chance of stopping. They go long. So it's a really tricky problem you're trying to solve for there of, do I want to lay up? Am I okay with going long, getting TIO relief? Is, you know, what's the sort of calculus here? And it looked like Ronan Ying was as set up as she possibly could be to win the tournament. And then all of a sudden, three putts later, and you're going home without any hardware in hand. So
yeah.
a wild, wild end. I feel like there are two other sort of big names in this field who did not get it done that are worth talking about. And I think the first is Nelly Korda. And I think she probably suffers from the same criticism that Scottie Scheffler receives at time, which is to say, and especially because they were both doing the same things at the same time last year, you know, Nelly wins this tournament where you expect them to be the elite player. You expect them to win every single week. When they don't, they're under this massive level of critique of what's wrong with this player. We saw Nelly struggle in that first round, but really get it together on Friday and make the cut. And then was in contention to a certain extent, makes two doubles on Sunday and eventually kind of falls off the pace a little bit. But if you're watching Nelly play right now, where do you see her as being slightly off in the same way that we're looking at Scottie Scheffler on tour and saying, why hasn't he won a bunch of times already this year?
Yeah, I don't know if it's like if it's a benchmark, if last year can be a benchmark, even for like Scottie, it's the same type of thing. They're such great players, like any given week, you know, they're still in the top of the leaderboard usually. So where I feel like last year everything was firing on all cylinders, and then with Nelly now it's just week in and week out, you might just have something a little bit off, a little here and there. And you heard her talk at the beginning of the week saying, you know, this is a new year. Like what happened last year, nobody can take from me, but this is a new year. And I think it's kind of hard, you know, as much mental discipline as you can have to not have like the expectations, but that's what makes them the best players in the world. So I think it's definitely difficult managing expectations. And I wonder, it's just like your golf can just be a little bit off and you can have one thing going really well. And I think of last year, everything was firing on all cylinders. So I think that's where you really just see a little bit of the difference, but still all in all, a great player, and you see her fight back. And you never know, you know, you start four over first round, I think it was, something like that. And if it's a little bit like, oh, like I can breathe now, like it's just, I just have to go out there and just absolutely ball tomorrow. And there's some relief to that maybe than having like all of the expectation. So I don't know if it's that, or she just might feel a little bit tweaks here and there with her game. But I think you're going to see her do really well throughout the year. She's still a great player. I think it's the having the year that the two of them had last year is so hard to follow up on.
And Lexi Thompson was another very interesting story this weekend. Someone who is, you know, theoretically semi-retired, and maybe in the few years prior to this semi-retirement, did not have any real notable results in major championships. And now all of a sudden, in semi-retirement, here she is in contention on a Sunday with her brother on the bag, and maybe feeling less pressure and stress around it. What do you think the semi-retirement was the formula for Lexi all along? And now we're going to see her start contending, maybe winning a major in the near future.
I don't know. Maybe. I'm always hopeful. Like, she's such a great player and seems to be having a good time out there. So I think that, you know, she always wants to win. She'll always, I think if she's going to tee it up, she's going to be working really, really hard in her days off and grinding. And I think she's doing just that. And she just might be playing in a few less events, but that doesn't mean I think that she cares any less. I think she might be enjoying it a little bit more, having her brother on the bag, having some laughs. I think that he probably adds a lot of humor out there. And she really played great, I think, this week all the way up until Sunday. And, you know, maybe that's just getting some reps in, but I think that, yeah, we could see her play great golf. I think her game is like right there. And I think into the majors, you know, that's what really matters a lot to her, as it does to a lot of players as it gets, you know, into the later parts of your career. So her game seems to be in great shape. And I don't think the retirement life, I think she's still working really hard, probably in the off season, maybe just a little bit less travel. And maybe that is a great formula. Yeah. I think she's in a great phase of life and a lot of exciting things happening for her. So.
If nothing else, was a great like PR spin of, you know, I'm stepping away and there's this, and then every time she plays this huge drama around it, but here she is. It's just like, I just want to play less, and it's working out for her seemingly. So yeah. We touched on it a little bit before, you know, the identity of this major, and this was, you know, the famous, the Dinosaur at Mission Hills Country Club in Rancho Mirage, California, and jumping in Poppy's Pond. And that was, you know, a very special, iconic visual that the LPGA, the women's golf, owned. And it's a place where you played Q School. And, you know, for a number of different reasons, you know, this it gets moved to the Woodlands, Texas, which is north of Houston, to the Club of Carlton Woods. And the identity is different. And I think that there are, you know, all sorts of reasons that could be behind that. But, you know, probably a large portion of it would be you have a sponsor in Chevron that, you know, has some sort of leverage or say into where they want this thing to be. And if they're also financially underwriting an event and it's a critical, you know, level of financial support they're providing to women's golf, you kind of have to take that into account. There was some critiques this week of just small crowds and whether or not this was a good fit. Let's just start with your thoughts on the Club of Carlton Woods. You know, is this working for you a couple years into the experiment?
Yeah, I think for me in particular, growing up in the phase that it was at Mission Hills and jumping into Poppy's Pond, I think that it was really sad for me to see it go from there, because I think that's something in female golf and the LPGA that was very historic and that, you know, players like I could aspire to. And, you know, I can remember seeing in my brain, like Annika walking the bridge, Lexi walking the bridge, Lorena Ochoa. And I think that that's great. I think aspirations for young girls, and it's just great history to have for the LPGA. So I definitely was sad to see it to go to Carlton Woods. I think Carlton Woods has a lot of great holes, you know, that finishing stretch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A great hole, you know, great. There's nothing I think bad about that. I think that the attachment with Mission Hills and this event, what was the Dinosaur, then went to the ANA and now Chevron. And of course you have to, you know, respect Chevron for sponsoring it and being a huge major, and they are trying to reenact with the Poppies, or I don't think you call it Poppy's Pond, but it's Pond on the 18th. I couldn't call it Poppy's.
Pond that might have gators in it. We're not sure. I would not be jumping in that pond, but, you know, good on the women who are.
You're quick in and out.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I think I would like to see it maybe at a historic, bring back the history, bring back the significance, and make it something really special again. And if they can do that, that's awesome. Nothing to say that's not still a great event. I think I would like to see that for the LPGA.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, it's a conversation Smiley and I have had at times, and you and I were talking before this record, of just how do you create identities for these majors? And I do think that there is a built-in PR benefit of going to venues that are perhaps, you know, whether the footprint's too small to host a men's major or the actual course itself is too short to host a men's major. But there is a great amount of, you know, respect or history or prestige attached to a club where you can go. And it's not a great example, but Pebble Beach, because it still hosts men's U.S. Open. But the women going to Pebble Beach, a ton of eyeballs that are curious to see the way that's going to play, you know, with women. And I thought, you know, going to Baltusrol and just all there are a number of different venues you can go and find where there are going to be eyeballs that tune in because they want to see major championship golf being played there. And then the hope is that you hook those fans and they stay because they really have an affinity or they enjoy the product. And you know, I just you got to think that's got to be a blueprint, you know, that at least sounds like the USGA and the PGA of America are running. And you know, could that be a play for this major?
I think it definitely could, because you can see how many people just want to watch, you know, with YouTube golf now, people play great golf courses just to get a glimpse into them. And I think that could be something great for the LPGA, especially with the audience that the LPGA has and the focus on, I think, precision. You know, the swings are beautiful. The consistency is amazing. And how they approach these, I think, historic golf courses. The U.S. Open was at Sabonic when I was in high school. And I remember that just being like unbelievable, like incredible for female golf just to be on a stage like that. So I definitely think maybe elevating in any way that they can. I'm partial to the Northeast. There's the Truist Championship at Philadelphia.
Oh,
Cricket.
Yeah, Philly Cricket. Can't wait.
So something like that, maybe. I know they had the KPMG at Aronimink a couple years ago. So I think integrating those, I think, could be great for the LPGA. Would love to see it and find, I think, for this event in particular, kind of a staple venue that they can pencil in always to the schedule.
All right. So, Brent, I want to take you out. You got some exciting stuff on the horizon. I don't know if you're on what plan you're on, if you're on the Lexi Thompson semi-retirement plan, but you, whatever you're doing, you got some exciting stuff coming up. You have a U.S. Women's Open qualifier in Virginia. Springfield Golf and Country Club, we think, is the venue. And then a sponsor exemption into the Monday qualifier at Liberty National for the Mizuho, doing some cool stuff with Dunning Golf there. Give us a little the spiel. Tell us what's on the docket and how you're feeling about your chances in the MVP.
Yeah, you know, I've been out of competition for like, I guess it's about 2 years now. I've had labrum and neck nerve damage. So this year, really working to get my game back, which is fun. But I have a whole appreciation for the difficulty, I think, of golf. I'm very humbled by it. But yeah, super excited going straight into the gauntlet with 36 holes on Wednesday at the US Open qualifier. You know, I'd like to see my game be in a little bit better place, but my expectations, I think, are more managed for US Open, which could be helpful. So we'll see there. And then, yeah, thanks to Dunning for the exemption into the Monday qualifier up at Liberty National. I've never played that course, so I think it's going to be awesome. I grew up not far from New York and I've never seen Statue of Liberty, so I'll be taking that in. Yeah, it's pretty wild.
It's a good place to see it for the first time.
I think it's going to be amazing.
Liberty National,
so
good views there.
Whether I'm playing good or bad, you know, I just look over there. So I think it'll be really fun. And yeah, hopefully I'm in that week, but it'll be just a good opportunity. So I'm grateful that Dunning was able to give that to me. And we'll see. Stay tuned. But I'm excited just to kind of be in the competitive fire again, you know, get those juices flowing. So it'll be great.
Well, best of luck to you, Bryn, and everyone who's listened this far. You know, follow Bryn, root her on. Let's see if she can get into the U.S. Women's Open and the Mizuho. We'd love to see you know, get into those events and play well there. So thanks so much for taking the time to join the show, Bryn, and go Heels.
Yeah, go Heels. Shout out Ben Griffin again. It's always go Heels. So thanks for having me, Charlie. Blast talking to you guys, and have a great week.
You know, I listen to this podcast. It's really cool. And
all of our lovely fans and subscribers, but make sure you like and subscribe.
It's cool to see what you guys are doing. I know golf fans appreciate it, but we do too. So please keep it up.
For all the good people of YouTube, like and subscribe.
You guys have some good takes. So I'm happy to come on and shoot the